Sanders running routes. Gabe Davis all the things, baby.
First of all, yeah. Like, anybody that was worried about Gabe Davis and Dynasty, stop.
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, D-Bro, and with me, as always, to wrap up preseason, baby, it's over, and now we are staring straight into the eyes of week one, is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, you ready, man? You ready for all of... Look, we are right at the hilt of it, man. Ready for week one is going to be here before we know it.
I know, it's weird because, like, first of all, got to give you a massive shout out with all the preseason content you have been doing the last couple weeks. We talked before we got on the podcast how your sleep has suffered, but obviously we appreciate it. And I mean, the subs are taking stuff down, the readers, like you've been crushing it. So hats off to you. But yeah, it's weird now. We go from, you know, previewing preseason matchups and stuff to now all of a sudden about to be looking at week one matchups and stuff. It's going to be weird. But yeah, I mean, this was, and it was going to be a more eventful preseason just in general because we didn't have preseason last season. But man, I mean, like, I'm writing stuff about it now. I mean, there were so many takeaways for fantasy over the last couple weeks during this preseason. It was wild.
It's crazy, man. And we're going to get up to all of it. Some of the unfortunate injury news, that we're going to dive into and what that means for these teams, for fantasy purposes and things of that nature. But before we get into all this, man, I mean, the preseason has been amazing. I want to give a huge shout out to every single FTN sub that's been in the Discord 24/7 with me, talking plays, talking snaps, talking showdowns, talking all kinds of things at 2 and 3 a.m., prize picks, what lines we're chasing, which ones we're avoiding. It's been amazing, man. Absolute shout out to all of our subs. And if you want to go through all of that, I mean, it's been nothing but green screens, baby. Like, we have been taking stuff down. One of our subs just hit for over 7K, grabbing firsts and banking multiple GPPs. You love to see it, dude. It has been happening week over week over week, and I have loved it. Every minute of it, dude. And this is not to say, like, obviously, you know, you and I, we enter our own DFS lineups and we like money. We like winning money just as much as everybody else. But it's one of those great things that reminds you why you're staying up till 4 a.m. writing up depth chart players, wide receiver 10s, when you see the subs at FTN taking down contests. And that is a whole nother level of why we do this and why we dive into all this, because I love that. And not to say, like, I don't love winning money myself, because I do, but I love seeing our subs take stuff down and how awesome that is, man. And I know that, like, we're getting right into week one and it's really, really quickly approaching. This is one of the biggest weeks of drafts and redraft season of all things in fantasy football right now. And if you are doing your draft, you're getting prepped, you're getting ready, and you're like, I am tired of everybody in my home league, whether it's your mother-in-law, your father-in-law, your sister, your brother, your auntie, anybody talking shit to you about how they just body slammed you in a draft, you head over to Top Prop Sports right now, enter the code FTN, get signed up, import that league, and get them to shut up. Because once they put money up over at topropsports.com, and you say, okay, let's bet on this. Let's put some money up on this and see who takes this down. You create head-to-head contests and make people stand behind the beautiful rosters that they supposedly have. So import your league, head to topropsports.com, enter the code FTN, get signed up today, and it launches on September 1st, and it's going to be beautiful. Adam, so today, this is all preseason, man. Week 3 is in the bag. We are going to talk about our biggest takeaways, And to lead this off, dude, I mean, come on, we got to talk about the injuries first. I mean, J.K. Dobbins, out for the entire season. Irv Smith, we have no clue how long he's going to be out. A meniscus repair, it could be 3 weeks, 4 weeks, it could be the entire season. Start us off here, man. Like, what are your thoughts about J.K. Dobbins, like, in this backfield? Obviously, he's gone for the whole year. What do you see for this backfield now? Obviously, Gus gets the bump, but what else could we see here?
Yeah, and first of all, it's brutal. Just we've talked about it a ton. Like, injuries are the absolute worst, especially when it's a second-year player who is obviously, like, on the rise. And everybody, when the injury happened, was hoping, okay, please be, you know, not too serious. Please let him just, you know, if anything, miss a couple weeks and be able to come back. Very unfortunate that that's not the case, but like the Ravens now, they were linked to Todd Gurley in the past, and there, I think there was a report came out today that they're not interested in signing him, but we'll see. That could change easily. But yeah, I mean, like you said, Gus Edwards obviously becomes one of the more, you know, hyped players in fantasy for the next couple days. And look, like, Gus Edwards is really good. I mean, been one of the most efficient running backs in the league since entering the league. It's been like him and Nick Chubb have been like the most efficient running backs. And yes, Edwards hasn't been doing it on insane volume, but it hasn't been a small sample size, right? I mean, last year, 144 carries, over 5 yards a carry every season of his career. And a lot of that has to do with the Ravens, you know, their offense, right? They pretty much have the most unstoppable rushing attack in the league. We know what Lamar Jackson does, opening up the running game. The offensive line's good. The Ravens last year, look at our advanced metrics over at FTN. We have advanced offensive line metrics. They easily led the league in yards before contact per attempt. It was like 2.38. So like that's going to bode well for Gus. He's been at, I think, 2.5 and 2.3 yards before contact per attempt just himself over the last two seasons. So he's been an elite, territory in that metric. And you look at the numbers. I mean, I talked about this with Lamar Jackson before. Gus Edwards in the first half of the last season was actually their goal line back over J.K. Dobbins. And then down the stretch, Dobbins was getting more goal line work. But like Lamar Jackson doesn't get used at the goal line like Kyler Murray does in Arizona or like Josh Allen does in Buffalo. He only had one carry from inside the 5 yard line last year. And the year before that, he had, I think, five. So it's six carries inside the five over the last 2 years for Lamar Jackson. Gus Edwards is going to get goal line carries in an offense that ran the ball around 67% of the time from inside the five last year. That was a top six rate in the league. Like, there's really a lot to love about Gus Edwards. Is he going to be a 20 catch running back? Probably not. That's why he's not being drafted in the third or second round now. That's why he's probably going to be a fifth or sixth round draft pick still. But yeah, you obviously have to move him up quite a bit. We've all done that. And you look at, there's been some samples where he's been the lead back, right? Last year, there was one game where Dobbins and Ingram was benched by that point, and Dobbins was out. It was one of the weeks where Baltimore just had everybody on their team seemingly with COVID. Lamar Jackson, that was the game Lamar Jackson didn't play against the Steelers.
That was the, yeah,
Steelers. It was like Saturday or something. Like it was Tuesday. It was one of those weird games, right? Edwards had just 9 carries for 10 yards and a touchdown. But again, that was against the Steelers' elite run defense with no Lamar Jackson. You go back to 2018, Mark Ingram, obviously Dobbins wasn't on the team yet. Ingram was out of the lineup for one game. Edwards started 130 yards, 21 carries against the Steelers. And then you go back to, it was still in 2018. There was a stretch from week 11 on where Gus Edwards averaged 17.4 carries per game and had 3 100-yard games in a 7-game sample. So I think he needs to be, at least in half PPR leagues, a clear top 20 to 22 running back. I think I have him at RB 21. Obviously, in PPR leagues, you know, you make the argument, okay, do you still have Kareem Hunt over him? And some of these running backs are going to catch more passes. But yeah, I mean, I love Gus Edwards as a player. And like, I know Justice Hill's there, and they're probably going to use another running back in some capacity, but there's no reason for them not to give Gus Edwards 15 carries per game.
I don't disagree with you, man. I think that he is a top 20 running back. I mean, I think that, like, yes, is there a talent difference between J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards? Sure. We could talk about that all day, about, like, just raw talent and things of that nature. On paper, the guy is damn efficient. And this is going to lead us into the next backfield that we're going to talk about here after we discuss a little bit of how hopefully the swerve by Irv is just delayed a little bit. But with Gus, man, like, we've seen the talent, we've seen the efficiency, those things are not going away. He is only going to have to split a certain amount of this backfield. And if you want to talk about, okay, you're worried about J.K. Dobbins because Gus Edwards, and who's looking like the third or the second running back now is Tyson Williams.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a bigger, I mean, can we say that there's going to be a bigger divide between Gus and Tyson than there was going to be J.K. Dobbins and Gus?
Yes.
So looking at that, I think that, like, okay, we're looking at, and we were worried about J.K. Dobbins and whether you wanted to put him in, like, whether, I mean, it depended on ranks, man. Like, some people had him as, like, RB16, which I was like, oh, that's a little bit rich. But once you get past the mid to RB2 range, it gets hairy really fast, man.
And I get having him up to RB16 mm-hmm. because, like, you mentioned the efficiency. That's not going away. The volume, even if you don't think Gus Edwards is all of a sudden going to be a 20 carry per game running back, it's going up in some capacity. He was already somebody that was going to be a viable flex as with standalone value, and now he's the unquestioned starter. And there's legitimate ceiling, like massive touchdown upside. Like, we saw Dobbins score a ton of touchdowns down the stretch last year because Lamar Jackson doesn't really run the ball inside the five as much as you might think.
I adamantly agree, man. And so we're going to get to it. I keep kind of alluding to this other backfield, but we got to really quickly talk about Irv Smith here, man. With this meniscus surgery, 3 to 4 weeks is really kind of what we're hoping for. That's all the time that he missed. Because, like, I mean, come on, man. The breakout was going to happen. Maybe it still happens, but I hate this, man. I absolutely hate this. Like, we see talented players, like, at the very beginning stages of coming into their own and showing the rest of the NFL and fantasy gamers what the hell they could do, and Irv Smith was doing that, like, all in preseason. Mm-hmm. Anytime he was on the damn field making plays, all in camp, just coming down with red zone target after red zone target after red zone target, and now he's going to miss time. Now, I will say right now, if you're doing drafts this week, unless he falls in drafts, look, it's going to be difficult for me to draft him, man. Like, I hope, like, if you're going to be drafting this week, I hope that Irv Smith falls into some kind of range where it's like the later rounds. And if that's the case, maybe you pick him up, and if the news isn't bad or it's like, okay, he's out a month, then we're looking at, okay, then you're playing the waiver wire streaming game until Irv is back. And he's rocking your lineup by like week 5, week 6, somewhere around that range. And he's a tight end one for the rest of the season. But unless he's going to drop, there's also another range of outcomes where he misses the entire damn season. So I can't take him any earlier than like maybe the last 2 to 3 rounds of your fantasy draft in your redraft leagues this week. I mean, would you go any higher on Irv Smith? I mean, I don't see how, considering the range of outcomes there. There's an easy range where he just doesn't play.
I mean, it obviously pains me to say it, but you can't draft Irv Smith. Yep. You know, you have your drafts this week. You can't draft him. He needs to be off your draft board, and it sucks. But like you said, like, he's going to miss probably the first handful of weeks this season. It's entirely possible he misses the entire season. We just don't know yet. And it's the tight end position, right? Like I understand if you want to go with the approach of, you know, you draft two tight ends late and hope one of them breaks out, and now Irv Smith could be that second tight end. But it's like, if that first tight end doesn't pan out, Irv Smith might be on the field when you need to find another tight end to put in your lineup. So it sucks. He was having an incredible preseason. I understand that Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen weren't really playing, but like, just like you mentioned, in training camp, in practices, and then in the preseason, that Chiefs game, which was apparently the game before he came out and it came out that he was injured, ripped off a couple huge plays in the opening drive. Like, he was, I understand we've liked Irv for a while now, but I can confidently say, like, he was going to have a breakout year this year. And like it's still possible if he only misses a few weeks, but you can't draft him right now And it just, it's brutal because, like, so a couple weeks back, before everybody, you know, during the time where everybody assumed Zach Ertz was going to be traded, Dallas Goedert, like, if I didn't get one of the elite tight ends, it was either Goedert or Irv Smith. And now all of a sudden, like, I don't know what the hell to do because I don't feel as comfortable about Goedert. Irv's obviously going to miss time. And then, like, you've had even that, like, even further back, Anthony Firkser, really popular late round tight end that we were, especially you, were really high on. Then they trade for Julio Jones and that becomes less appealing. So it's like these late round tight ends, they're, is it Cole Kmet now and Gerald Everett? Is that it? Like where else do we go?
I mean, I still think there's a path for Anthony Firkser, and I understand everybody's like, okay, well, he's only playing in three wide sets and Tennessee doesn't do that a ton. And I'm like, he's still Tennessee's slot wide receiver. Like when they're running 12, he's running routes and the other guy isn't. So, yeah. I mean, you want to talk about, okay, well, he wasn't on the field for preseason when they went 12. Can we also talk about, and I went on a long rant, and I'm just going to sum this up really, really damn quickly. When certain factors don't present themselves as saying, okay, the starting quarterback never saw the damn field, A.J. Brown and Julio Jones never saw the damn field, we didn't see at all what this offense is going to look like for the regular season. So when you're projecting all these damn things, and you're talking about all these things in certainty, what will and will not happen, and none of the other players are on the freaking field, can you just sprinkle a little grain of salt over all of that analysis and understand that it's not as set in stone to sit there and fade Anthony Firkser as you possibly think it is? And he's not expensive in drafts. So I still think that Firkser is still very viable as a late round tight end. He is going to be used in the passing game. And when he's out there, he's going to run routes. And his targets per snap have been extremely high. So he's earned targets when he's been out there in the past. So I think that he is viable. I think Cole Kmet is viable because I just finished a write-up over at FTM Fantasy coming out today about five moves you need to be making, ads you need to be doing in Dynasty before week one. Cole Kmet's name is in there. If you look at all of the preseason, all of these highlights of Jesse James catching wide open passes for touchdowns, Jesper Horsted breaking preseason DFS slates, these are all Cole Kmet tweets. These are all reasons you should be really high still on Cole Kmet. And the real fact of it is you don't have to sit here and draft him early at all. And Chicago is going to run through these main veins in their passing game. It's going to be Allen Robinson. It's going to be Darnell Mooney. And it's going to be freaking Cole Kmet. So keep drafting him late and enjoy it. When he comes out in the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season and he's running a shit ton of routes, he's getting targets, and Justin Fields is under center, and it's time for Justin Fields, enjoy. Thank me. Get me up in those mentions. Shoot me DMs. Let's go.
Real quick before we move on, does Tyler Conklin become more interesting? Mike Zimmer's talked him up. He was, you know, he wasn't as involved as Irv Smith in the games where Rudolph was out last year, but he was, his routes and targets were pretty close. It's just Irv Smith's, you know, a better player, so he did more with those targets. But I mean, like, we obviously were excited about Irv Smith, but it wasn't like obviously Rudolph being out helps, but it, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, we wouldn't have said, and we haven't said that Irv Smith was in the greatest situation for fantasy. He still would have been the third target in the passing game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we haven't been out here like touting Irv Smith as a freaking top five tight end. We've been telling you, okay, he's
a young, immensely talented player too. Conklin becomes more interesting in you know, tight end premium leagues and stuff like that, and like deep dynasty leagues or whatever. Like one of the leagues I have Irv Smith on my team, I picked up Tyler Conklin. But it's like, I'm not vaulting Tyler Conklin to that Cole Kmet type range as a late, like, somebody to keep an eye on in the beginning of the season. We'll see, but like, he should be the clear starting tight end for this team.
He should be, and the reason that people, like, you can't one for one this kind of stuff. Like, okay, Irv Smith's out. Okay, now we should be really, really high on Tyler Conklin. There's a talent divide there too, and if targets are earned, Tyler Conklin is not of the same talent shelf as Irv Smith. So I think that Tyler Conklin, could he end up being like a top 12 to 15 tight end if Irv Smith is out the entire season? It's possible based off of touchdowns. Do I think that he's going to earn the same amount of target share as Irv Smith would have earned or could earn? No. So that's where I think the divide, and we need to treat this situation a little bit differently instead of saying, okay, well, Tyler Conklin got pretty similar targets last year. Tyler Conklin also got some red zone targets. He didn't get near the red zone targets that Irv Smith got. And the talent level is different. So could he be a top 15 tight end? Maybe sneak into the top 12 if touchdowns all fall his way? Possible? But I'm not willing to sit here and draft Tyler Conklin anywhere close to where I was with Irv Smith. So moving on to our next situation to discuss here, Adam. Your Buffalo Bills, dude, they let Josh Allen ball the hell out.
So good.
So beautiful to watch, man. Manny Sanders running routes. Gabe Davis doing all the things, baby.
First of all, yeah. Like, anybody that was worried about Gabe Davis and Dynasty, stop. Listen, we've talked a lot on this podcast about the Bills running backs and why. I like Zach Moss. I really like Devin Singletary. And it's like, still, it's like, I don't really want to rely on them for fantasy. And again, the most people go right to, yeah, Josh Allen's going to steal their touchdowns, which is a perfectly valid and legitimate argument. That's going to happen. But it's Brian Daboll. I've said this so many times. Brian Daboll is like low-key the best coordinator for fantasy right now, because we saw it. Josh Allen threw the ball on every snap in the first quarter in his first preseason game. He did not, like, Devin Singletary played 15 snaps, didn't have a carry in any of them. Like, what are we, like, Brian Daboll is amazing. It's one of the reasons, obviously, Stephon Diggs plays a huge factor, plus the fact that Josh Allen was already immensely talented and put it all together. But, like, we're sleeping on how great Brian Daboll is for this offense and why Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley are going to be good in fantasy for, you know, in this team when they run 3 and 4 wide sets, and why this team's so pat. Like, Brian Daboll, man, like the whole preseason. Why do you think Mitch Trubisky went and balled out in week 2 of the preseason? He didn't make any, like, incredible throws. He played well, but it's Brian Daboll. He's such a great coordinator. Like, this is great. And they just threw and threw and threw, and you can't stop them. Stephon Diggs wasn't even on the field. He didn't play a snap. Like, they couldn't stop him.
It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful, man. And I love it because we're going to see all of the continued creativity. And the things that we want, and for fantasy, we want passing. We want points. Like, they're going to throw the ball one metric shit ton. Like, Josh Allen is going to keep throwing and keep throwing. And yes, all this is, like, hyper accentuated by the fact of, okay, it's week 3. He hasn't played. They're trying to get rapport with these receivers. Are they going to throw the ball like 50 times and run it 2 times? Probably not. But can we say that they're going to be top 5 in passing rate? Oh, yeah, baby. They are.
Yeah, and they're going to run a ton of
4 wide.
That game, obviously, Josh Allen's first game, they just wanted to get him in rhythm. They weren't going to run the football anyway, but like that was more so also to just get. But it was also like what their offense looks like. We've seen that multiple weeks last year where they just didn't run the football. First down, first down, first down. Like, they don't run the ball on first down. So, yeah, like, I've been moving up Emmanuel Sanders just because, like, he's still good at football, and he, like, this offense is going to be able to support. Like, yes, Diggs is going to be top 5, and nobody else is probably going to sniff top 20, 25, but they're going to have weeks because this offense is so good, and Brian Daboll is just going to throw and throw and throw. And, like, that was, like, it was kind of weird, too, because, like, on Twitter, everybody's like surprised that the Bills, like, what, have you guys watched Brian Daboll in this offense the whole last year? Like, this is what he does. This is why I've talked about Brian Daboll in my analysis of the Buffalo Bills for fantasy for the last year. Like, this is a huge part of how you approach and look at this team. And again, they couldn't be stopped. And it was Josh Allen's first game of the preseason, and Stephon Diggs wasn't even on the field. So, like, yeah, Josh Allen should probably be, at worst, your quarterback 2 in your rankings. Like, if you have him outside of your top 3, I think you're overthinking it. And maybe not, because the top 5 is so loaded, but I don't know, man. He just looks so good. Like, the throw he had to Gabe Davis is an absolute rocket.
I know you're drunk on Josh Allen. Like, the top 5 is an interesting place, and there is so much talent there. Like, I get it. I get it. And I'd have to go look and check my ranks. I think he's inside my top 3. But there's a lot of different outcomes for a lot of players in that range. But I'm not talking anybody out of the Josh Allen love, okay? This passing attack go, is going to be amazing.
I was just going to say, go trade for Gabe Davis. Still. Please.
Please. He's really good at football, man. He's I don't know what to tell people. Like,
dude, think about it. Think about how good last year's rookie class of overall players, but especially pass catchers, was. Where Gabriel Davis had the year he had and is a player he's becoming and isn't even like a top seven receiver from that class. Maybe he is. Maybe he's like seventh or sixth, but it's like, it's crazy, man.
I think that the reason that he has the path to like a high ceiling, okay, is because he's still going to garner deep targets in this offense. They're going to pass a ton. And all of that passing rate is going to elevate the target floors for all of these pass catchers. Now, how much four wide versus three wide do they run? Things of that nature. But if you see, like from the hill, like, he's got the talent to take another step in his second year in this offense, on this team. And yes, like, if Manny Sanders and Cole Beasley stay healthy, do they hurt his overall ceiling? Sure. I think that, and I'm not projecting injuries at all, but if we're shooting shots in the later rounds and you're shooting a shot on a guy that could be the, like, as far as like shooting shots and ceiling inside this offense, he has more ceiling. Well, we know who Manny is. We know who Cole Beasley is. We haven't seen a fully unlocked Gabe Davis yet, and he's an ascending player. Like, out of those three wide receivers as the second point in the Buffalo Bills passing attack, does he carry the most risk? Yes. Does he also carry the highest possible ceiling in this wide receiver core? Yes. So moving on to another wide receiver room, and we're going to discuss some more injuries here, Adam. The news comes out that T.Y. Hilton is going to miss multiple weeks with a neck injury. What are your thoughts on him? I mean, like, he's not a player that I was drafting at all anyway, and this passing attack for Indy, I think, is going to be spread out. I was taking ceiling shots like Michael Pittman early in the offseason before the hype got crazy and then the Wentz injury and all of those things. I've always been, and you know this, and I'm still there on Paris Campbell because he's going to run out of the slot. He's going to get short area targets. He has speed for damn days. I think that I'm still going to continue to target Paris Campbell because he's the cheapest option in this passing attack. I think Pittman still, his ADP's gone down a little bit, but it's still a little bit rich, man. I mean, what do you, I know you weren't drafting T.Y. either. What do you make out of this passing attack?
So I haven't really been interested in the Colts receivers in general. Because, like you said, it's going to be spread out. They're still going to want to run the football. And then you have the wrinkle of the Carson Wentz injury situation, which sounds like he might be ready for week one. For me, Michael Pittman is obviously going to, you know, be, you know, he's going to get more attention. I might just wait and get like Zach Pascal. Zach Pascal is probably going to be their number two receiver in two wide sets. And like, Zach Pascal is not like, I don't know if he's like, well, he's definitely not Marvin Jones, but in just terms of like underrated receivers like Tim Patrick, like somebody like Zach Pascal is really underrated. Like, he's produced whenever he's on the field, I feel like. So for me, maybe you just like get Zach Pascal in these best balls and deeper leagues in the, you know, double digit rounds because he does produce when he's on the field and he's going to be on the field more now. Obviously, Paris Campbell. The ceiling is obviously higher with Pittman and Paris Campbell. Michael Pittman last year was really elite in terms of yards after the catch per reception. And we started to see him down the stretch, including the playoff game against Buffalo, really get used on, you know, quick passes, slants and stuff like that. When he was drafted by the Colts, they viewed him as like a downfield target. So him running more routes and different routes could be interesting. And obviously Paris Campbell, if he can stay healthy, I mean, the speed that he has alone is, shows his upside, but don't sleep on Zach Pascal.
I like that call, man. I mean, Pascal's been top two in red zone targets on this team over the last two seasons. I like him. I like that call a lot, dude, because I think that, yeah, he definitely gets overlooked. He doesn't get enough love, and when he's been in the starting lineup, he's rotated. He's played outside. Last year, he played the slot whenever Paris was out. I think that he is going to be, I mean, when they go 12, I think it's Pascal that doesn't leave the field, not Paris. So, yeah, I like that call a lot, man. Moving on, Courtland Sutton looked like Courtland Sutton of old, man. Like, scored a touchdown in week three. I mean, good Lord, did you see the video, Adam? Did you watch that play? Courtland Sutton juked that dude into another damn dimension.
That's got to be so encouraging because I believe when he planted his foot, it was the leg where the leg that he hurt last year. So, like, just for, like, his confidence, because I feel like it's a huge part of players coming off leg injuries and foot injuries is having the confidence to plant and cut. And he did, and obviously the results were great. And then he goes out and scores an end zone touchdown from Teddy Bridgewater. Sutton's one of those players this entire offseason where I've really, and a lot of it had to do with the quarterback situation. Now we know for a fact it is going to be Teddy Bridgewater to start the season. But, like, similar to Odell Beckham, he's one of those players, and he's in that same range, where it's like, I don't know what to expect from him, but in a lot of drafts, like, Judy's passed him in ADP now. In a lot of drafts, you can get Courtland Sutton as, like, your wide receiver 3 or 4, and I mean, my goodness, when we last saw him play a full season, he was obviously outperforming that production. He could have immense upside as a wide receiver 3 or 4, so just overall, like, really encouraging Courtland Sutton's first in-game action since... What was it, week 1, week 2 of last season when he suffered the injury? It was really encouraging.
Yeah, and I mean, Jerry Jeudy, the hype has gotten extremely damn high, and I don't think the range
he started climbing like the 4th and 5th round, and I'm like, I'm not taking him over like Deontay Johnson and some of these receivers, and I probably would still have Thielen over him now with Irv out. Like, I like Jeudy a lot. I wrote about him last week. Really good player, but I mean, 4th round.
I think we're out of our skis, man. We're out of our skis with the hype. I mean, like, the range of outcomes is not different for Jeudy versus Courtland Sutton. I mean,
right.
And you know, you and I have talked about this all offseason, so not going to spend a ton of time on this, but Denver is still going to be a run-first team.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen that. We haven't seen that because you haven't seen Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams, all of these parts or pieces on the field at the same damn time. They are going to want to run the ball, and the targets are not going to be enough to sit here and support all of these fantasy options that everybody freaking loves. Like, Noah Fant's a top 10 tight end. Okay, well, he's quietly dealing with injuries as well. They're saying he's going to be ready for week 1. We don't know. But you can't be drafting all of these guys. Like, okay, where does Courtland Sutton fall? If he doesn't fall outside the top 30 wide receivers or 36 wide receivers, we've got a team that wants to run the damn ball, and people are drafting Noah Fant top 8. People are drafting Jerry Jeudy in the 4th and 5th freaking round. And they're letting Courtland Sutton fall a little bit, but... honestly, like, this team is not going to throw enough to sit here and support 2 top 36 wide receivers and a top 7 tight end. It's not going to happen. So pick and choose your spots, man. Jerry Judy's gotten way too freaking expensive at drafts. I would just say no thank you. And I have not been drafting any Noah Fant. Just not doing it. Like, people are drafting him above even what he showed you last year. He didn't even put up top 10 production at the tight end position last year with less competition for targets, a higher target share. Those things are coming down and they're changing. So Courtland Sutton, honestly, like, give me Javonte out of this offense. Give me Courtland Sutton if he falls. Past that, nah. Moving on.
And I would I would say draft the Broncos defense.
They're going to be...
I'm like half being sarcastic, but like we both agree. Like, I think they're going to be a borderline top 5 unit. So, and I believe their early season schedule is absurd. So, but I agree. Like, Jeudy in the 4th round, like, I can't get there yet. And I love Jeudy as a player, but overall, like back to Sutton. Like, again, like, that's got to be so like encouraging and reassuring for him coming off the injury to do what he did on over the weekend. So, I'm happy for him. It's good stuff.
All right, moving on to the 49er quarterback situation, man. We saw this mix and match, and if Jimmy keeps this job, people make all the damn Taysom Hill jokes they want to. If Jimmy is still going to be the starter, Trey Lance is going to be doing some Taysom Hill type of things to Jimmy Garoppolo in this offense. Coming in, getting rushing attempts. I'm not saying he's catching passes. That's not where I'm going with this. But what I'm talking about is, like, both of these guys, unless Trey Lance takes over the starting position, they're going to be frustrating as hell for both of them. Now, is it going to be good for the offense? Oh, you bet it is. Like, Shanahan is having the time of his life with all of these chess pieces. And we saw that in this preseason game. Like, Raheem Mostert's ripping off runs. He's mixing and matching personnel and packages and motion and all of these different things. The 49ers are going to put up a crap ton of points, but we might honestly be, like, scratching our heads outside of, like, okay, George Kittle on a weekly basis, where the hell the ball was going.
Yeah, and I've already talked about my concerns with Brandon Ayuk, not as a player or anything, just where he's being drafted in terms of the targets he might see compared to receivers being drafted around him. And now you have what we saw in their preseason game, where it was rotating Garoppolo and Trey Lance, and then Trey Lance, I believe, played like into the third quarter. But Garoppolo played more snaps with the starters. It wasn't by much, but it was more. And then after the game, Kyle Shanahan says, like, rotating the quarterbacks will always be an option over the course of the season. Like, that could be very fun and good for their offense, but for fantasy, like, that could be an absolute headache. Because there's going to be situations where Garoppolo may be, you know, driving down the field, and then Kittle's getting some catches, and Debo's getting some catches, and Ayuk's getting catches, then they get inside and close, and Trey Lance runs for a touchdown, and Raheem Mostert can't get the touchdown, or Trey Sermon can't get the touchdown. So this is a thing, like, that's, we actually really do need to keep an eye on, because especially with Kyle Shanahan, is one of the most creative offensive minds in the NFL. Like, this is legitimately a thing.
Oh, it's going to be a thing. And then we're going to have the Kyle Juszczyk weeks where he comes in and he catches two freaking touchdowns. This offense is going
to be
amazing.
Shout out to Kyle Juszczyk. Made the top 100 NFL players, and it's absolutely warranted. He is such a good football player.
He is, man, and he is a centerpiece on a lot of different things that they do, whether it's motion, a lot of their personnel packages, going 21 personnel. He is a big, big part of all the things. It might not show up in the box score. He is a big part of all the things that they do offensively. Moving on to another different room, and we got to discuss this, dude. I mean, look, we've hyped him. We've talked about him a ton. The Panthers wide receiver room is really interesting, man. I love these wide receivers. Yes, you're going to have to pay up for DJ Moore in drafts. What we saw out of week 3, Sam Darnold looked good. Terrace Marshall continued to do the damn thing, which every time he does when he gets on an NFL field, if you don't like him and you don't want to draft him at the later part of your draft, what are you doing, baby?
Terrace Marshall, like, or Davante Adams? You can only choose one. Terrace Marshall or Davante Adams?
It's got to be Terrace, right? That's the right answer here. I feel like that's what you're setting me up for. Yeah,
Terrace has looked really good, man.
Dude, he's looked so good. And then people are like, then I get in my mentions after I put out the tweet, and like, I'm like, Terrace Marshall is that dude. People are like, man, the 40-year-old guy that's like the 40-year-old guy sitting on his couch and saying, like, man, any NFL wide receiver can make that play. I'm like, come on, man. Like, why are you going to throw shade at a rookie wide receiver and moving all over the formation, playing 65% out of the slot, going to be a mismatch every single week, and he's still going outside the top 120, 130 players. In your home league, he's going to fall. Just draft more Terrace Marshall and enjoy it.
Would you, first of all, I agree. Terrace Marshall, like, we've seen him move around the entire formation, like you said. I think he's had 10 targets just out of the slot this preseason. He wasn't playing in their week. And again, DJ Moore and Robbie have barely played in the preseason. Week 3 was their first game altogether. Robbie and DJ Moore were playing in 12 personnel, but this team's going to run 3 wide a lot. We know that. Joe Brady is going to use, like, that's why I was so excited about Marshall when he got drafted to Carolina, because Joe Brady is going to know exactly how to utilize him, and we've seen that already. DJ Moore, though, small sample, but the A dot was incredibly lower compared to what we saw over the regular season. And, like, it's not going to be, what'd you say it was before we got on the pod, his A dot?
Dude, 13.7 last year, 2.5.
Yeah, like, it's obviously not going to be 2.5, but
yeah,
like,
agreed.
If it goes down to 8, like, cause DJ Moore has been top 10 in receiving yards each of the last 2 seasons, right? He's been incredible in that regard. The catch rate fell off a cliff last year because he was used way more downfield. If he can be like in the middle, right? Like, like 9, you know, 9.5, maybe 10 for average at the target. Give him some deep shots because DJ Moore is good in that role. It's just he's so good everywhere else as well. You don't want to just strictly have him in that role, especially because he's so good after the catch. So, like, I've seen a lot of people say, like, after watching that game, they're, like, moving DJ Moore down. And I'm like, he had, what, 6 targets? He caught all of them. His yardage wasn't great, sure, but, like, he's not going to have an average at the target of 2.5. Like, and if he's getting more highly convertible targets, like, I'm not moving off DJ Moore at all. Robbie's underrated as always. He scored a touchdown. Like, there's a reason why, like, this Panthers offense is being so highly, you know, targeted in drafts, because McCaffrey's the 1-on-1. We know that. DJ Moore is not even, like, he goes in, like, the 4th, late 3rd. Like, that's not a crazy high draft pick. Robbie's undervalued, and Terrace Marshall's still relatively undervalued. So, like, and they have a great open season schedule. So, it's like, there's a reason why the Panthers are so exciting. Like, I said this before. I've said this with Pat Corain when he's been on the pod, with John Daigle. Like, we've talked about the Panthers a lot. I don't know how many drafts I've done this offseason where I don't have at least one member of the Carolina Panthers. And it sounds weird, but they're all such good players.
It's crazy that we're going to sit here and slight or talk about how people are, at least, and I've seen takes out there, how we don't want to draft DJ Moore because now he's not getting his, and if that comes to fruition, yes, immensely small sample size here. One game. But tell me this, Adam. How are we going to sit here and be like, oh, okay, well, we need to be drafting Robbie Anderson. We need to draft Robbie Anderson because he gets all these intermediate targets. But we're not going to sit here and draft DJ Moore because maybe he gets the role that we thought he was getting last year. And you're looking at a player that was top 10 in yards after the catch the season before that. But now we don't want to draft DJ Moore because he's getting more short area targets, more convertible targets. And he's a monster after the catch. Tell me how any of this makes sense when it's like, draft Robbie Anderson because he gets intermediate targets. Oh my God, a more talented player than DJ Moore is going to get those intermediate targets? Oh, we got to fade him. You got to fade DJ Moore because he's not getting deep targets. But on the other hand, you're sitting here telling people to draft Robbie Anderson because of that fact? Help me make sense out of this.
Yeah, I've been high on DJ Moore all offseason. I'm not moving off him. And this is kind of encouraging to me. Again, he's not going to have an average depth of target that low. He's going to get shots down the field. And if they use him in the screen game more, and like the touchdowns should come up because they just have been absurdly low. Like, yeah, I'm on board. Let me ask you this. And it coincides with some of the issues and struggles Jamar Chase has had, which, again, I'm not really worried about. But is Terrace Marshall, is this a hot take to say he's a number 2 rookie receiver in drafts behind Devonta Smith?
Ooh.
I think it's still pretty hot.
But I think it's still pretty hot, but I mean,
it's
like,
getting dangerously close to being like lukewarm at best.
Dude, like Bateman's gonna miss some time. I mean, right. Like Terrace Marshall. I mean, put it this way: if Waddle's still
in that range, and obviously there's immense upside with him. I would still, like, if I'm drafting today, I'm still taking Jamar Chase over Terrace Marshall. But I mean, he's in an offense that's perfect for him, and he's looked so good.
Well, the easy layup here is, at their ADPs, who the hell do you want? Do you want Terrace Marshall, or do you want Jamar Chase?
Chase is going as, like, a top 25 receiver, and Marshall's around, like, wide receiver 40-plus. So.
Oh, yeah. He's, like, in the 50s, dude. Like, he's in the 50s. He was in the 60s. He's still going to be drafted way too low. I don't think it's a hot take. I think that Terrace Marshall, I think a lot of this hinges on what do we see out of the pace for Carolina this year. If the pace is still bottom 3, then yeah, he probably doesn't make it into the top 2. If Chase can, you know, get things right, be the guy that we think he's going to be, then it's probably Chase over Terrace Marshall. Now, if Carolina surprises us in pace, they're even league average, maybe a shade above that. Could he get as many targets as Chase this year? I don't think it's crazy to say that, Adam. I mean, like, seriously, am I drinking the sauce too much? Like, to
I mean,
say
I
this,
asked
like,
the question because I think it's interesting. Like, again, I still expect Chase to have a better year. I'm not worried about the drops. Like, I don't care about drops.
Chase, like, just looks like he's pressing, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks like he's pressing. Like, that the one highlight clip, and like, He drops the ball almost immediately. It looks like he's already thinking in his mind, okay, I got to sit here and make a play after the catch. I got to turn up field before I even secure the ball. He looks like he's pressing. I think Chase is going to be a guy that we could see maybe struggle out of the gate. And you need to be sending out like early season offers to see and try to get him on your squad. Because once he hits the damn ground running, once he knocks the rust off and he starts balling the hell out the rest of the season, I think he's going to crush, man. So he's a guy that I will be and we'll probably be talking about more and more. If he comes out and he looks like, okay, some things are kind of off out of the first 3 weeks of the season, I think Chase is a guy that we're going to love down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, let's not get it twisted. Ja'Marr Chase is still one of the best wide receiver prospects I've ever seen. So, and, I wasn't worried about it as much when we did the pre-draft analysis and stuff, but he did miss a full year of football. That needs to be accounted for in some capacity.
It does. And I mean, running routes versus air versus running routes versus like high school cornerbacks versus running routes on a practice field are very, very different when you put on pads, get in game action. And there are a lot of moving parts to this. So I still like Chase. I'm not moving him down. I'm not moving off of him. I'm not worried at this point, man. But moving over to another situation we need to be worried about, because some of the things we've seen out of preseason. In Jacksonville, this backfield, and you and I talked about this right after the ETN injury, and I tried to tell people that Urban Meyer is a buffoon and that he's going to do dumb shit, and we're seeing it, Adam. Trevor Lawrence, 66 snaps of the first team in preseason. James Robinson, he has been in on 50% of those snaps. Now, you might say, well, that's not too terrible. Carlos Hyde's playing on 42% of snaps, people. Carlos Hyde is out there almost as much as James Robinson. Carlos Hyde is running almost as many routes as James Robinson. In the preseason, Robinson 18 routes. Carlos Hyde 16 routes. Doesn't matter that Carlos Hyde has a negative yards per route run. Doesn't matter. Because it's immensely impressive. The even more impressive part is that Urban Meyer doesn't give a shit. Urban Meyer doesn't care what I think. He doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care what anybody thinks, except for Carlos Hyde. He's going to play Hyde, and we need to worry about the situation. So as much as you love James Robinson, after seeing this unfold over week after week after week, and yes, it's small sample, and yes, it's limited, and yes, it's preseason. Again, though, I think it's really, really tough to project James Robinson to get a 60 to 65% snap share in this backfield right now, even close to the 70-plus percent that he was in on last year. So this just hammers home the point for me that once you're in these middle rounds, once you're past the top two rounds, you need to be considering wide receivers over these freaking running backs. You really, really do. Like, wide receivers that could get you 120, 130 targets, heck, maybe even a shade more, can come down within the range of outcomes, double-digit touchdowns, versus James Robinson? Yeah, I'm going to go with the wide receiver. Because Carlos Hyde's going to factor into this backfield. Urban Meyer is a total idiot. I am not going to draft James Robinson over a wide receiver in that range.
So there was a stretch last year, and obviously I talked about this a lot, but like Jacksonville had no backup running backs last year, like at all. And obviously Carlos Hyde has a track record with Urban Meyer, but there was a stretch last year where James Robinson was legitimately seeing like 85 to 90% of the carries for this team. That's not happening this year. It wasn't happening again regardless, but it's not happening again. Let me ask you this. Half PPR league, you're drafting today. Gus Edwards or James Robinson?
Oh, it's Gus.
Okay, it's Gus. You didn't even hesitate. And I think a lot of people would still go James Robinson, but I don't.
I think they will. Where are you going? You tell me then.
I have to double check where I have them. I believe I have them back to back, but I might have actually moved Gus ahead of him.
Yeah, I'm going to head over to my ranks too.
I still think Robinson has a higher ceiling of getting like 20 carries a game, but like Gus Edwards, we know the efficiency is going to be better. I think he has higher touchdown probability. Robinson, like, there's not many running backs in the league right now that have a lower ceiling in receptions than Gus Edwards. So Robinson definitely has a higher ceiling. But yeah, like, when they originally signed Carlos Hyde, this was before the NFL draft, they signed him. It was viewed as a positive for James Robinson. They could have brought in another running back, more explosive, younger running back, and they didn't. But maybe we were overlooking how much Urban Meyer just wanted to use him. And it's not like this Hyde usage has come all of a sudden after Etienne's injury, because he was playing over Etienne anyway, and he was splitting first team reps with James Robinson when Etienne was healthy.
He was. And the thing about it is that now Etienne was garnering more of the routes, but if you go back and if you've been reading any of my preseason content over at FTN Daily, this was a three-headed backfield before Etienne went out. It was James Robinson, it was Etienne, and it was Carlos Hyde. Now, Robinson and Hyde were more the early down guys, and maybe Robinson was running a few routes, and so was Carlos Hyde, but ETM was really, really garnering all the pass game work. Like, this backfield is now going to be a two-way committee. Like, and these guys are going to be more interchangeable than I think any James Robinson truther wants to see. I'm not saying it's right, people. I'm not. I mean, obviously, you could tell I'm not a huge fan of Urban Meyer. He's doing things that don't make a whole lot of damn sense. They drafted Travis Etienne in the first damn round because they already had James Robinson. They signed Carlos Hyde. Now he's playing Hyde just as much as he's playing Robinson. And nobody knows. Nobody understands it. It doesn't stop Urban Meyer. And it's not going to stop Urban Meyer. So the other thing I'm going to throw in here, Adam, real quick before we get up out of here, is that considering all of that, Carlos Hyde needs to be a guy that you garner with your last draft pick of your draft. Yes, mm-hmm. It's gross. Yes, I understand you might not like it. Yes, you might want to make 15 billion jokes, and the rest of your league might as well, about Carlos Hyde. I'm not saying he's amazing, but a player that if he garners half of the work in this backfield and they run the ball a good amount, which they're going to do, he's going to be flex worthy. He's going to get 10 to 12 touches weekly, and whether he's good or not, we have seen Carlos Hyde catch a shit ton of balls before when he was in San Francisco. He does have the ability now, after what he does after the catch is debatable, but in PPR leagues, he is going to walk into some flex-worthy weeks, and he's probably a guy that's going to be there in the last round of your draft, and he really shouldn't be considering all these things.
I mean, he caught a decent amount of balls during a small stint with Jacksonville before. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely not the most exciting pick you can make, but clearly he's going to be on the field.
He will be, and he's going to be involved, man. I mean, I think that the big takeaway out of all of my rants and all of this is move James Robinson down, draft the wide receivers, and grab Carlos Hyde with the last pick. All right, people, that is everything for today, all things preseason. Adam and I are going to be back later this week discussing best ball and why you need to be heading to drafters today. Get signed up with the promo code FTN. If you deposit up to $400 there, they will match 25% of that when you get signed up. Do so today. Adam and I are going to be doing live streams. We're going to be discussing all of this best ball action before week one. There is going to be overlay in their big, massive contest that has 25K to first place. So get drafting, get over there, do some best ball drafts today to get ready for all your home leagues and those drafts you have coming up this weekend. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.